Hi, everybody. This is Phil the Issues Guy from issuesprogram.com and Phil the Issues Guy on YouTube. Do you like television? Do you like talking about television? Do you have problems and can't sleep at night? If you any of those things are true, come on down and join Phil the Issues Guy on YouTube. Phil's recap and review, or check out issuesprogram.com to check out our stuff. Basically, what we do is we talk a lot about television, some movies, but mainly television. We do post-episode recaps, live viewings, drunk commentary games, and just general analysis. So if you love television, you don't have a ton of people to talk about television, or you just cannot get enough of some of these awesome shows like Vikings, Better Call Saul, Westworld, Game of Thrones, even The Walking Dead, and some other random shows that just pop up here and there. If you cannot get enough of all those programs and you want to talk about them, jump on over, join in the live motherfucking chat with some of the best people in the world that all share their thoughts real time whenever we go live. So if you subscribe to the YouTube channel, you follow the YouTube channel by clicking that little bell thing, you can find out anytime we go live. You can also check out issuesprogram.com for a backload of all of our stuff and check out our podcast on Stitcher, iTunes, and lots of other places. Huge thanks to all of you, and hope you check it out and hope you enjoy it. And I'll talk to you guys next time.
Welcome, listeners, to another edition of One on One. I am your host, your King Vibidak Evan Borgo. Thank you once again for tuning in. And my guests today got their start doing classic YouTube videos under the Mystery Guitar Man banner. Now they're hitting the big screen, writing and directing the new survival film Arctic, which hits theaters on February 1st. And one of these guys just so happens to be an old high school friend of mine. I am very happy to welcome to the show writer-director Joe Penna and writer Ryan Morrison. How are you two doing today?
Good. Thanks for having us.
How's it going, Evan? Yeah, it's good to talk to you.
It's good to talk to you guys as well. So my first question, and hopefully this might be a little bit of a simple question, what led you from doing Mystery Guitar Man videos to crafting something for the big screen?
Yeah, it was something that Ryan and I sort of, I wouldn't say stumbled into it, but we started doing these YouTube videos, and then we started doing commercials, and we started doing these videos, and then we started making short films, and then even longer short films, and then 40-minute long, I'll call it medium films, and, you know, we worked our way up into doing this.
So where did the idea for Arctic first come to fruition?
Well, it's Evan, it's funny because we're both Reddit nerds, and Joe happened to stumble across a poster on Reddit for a fake movie. There are some subreddits where you can see some fake movie posters, and it was like a barren wasteland of Mars. And the name of the fake movie was called On Mars, and Joe brought me the picture, and we just sat at the office kind of speculating as to what that movie would be about. And we ended up coming up with this survival story on this half-terraformed Mars, and Joe sent it over to our agents, and they had some interesting feedback.
Yeah, they were like, maybe consider changing the setting of this, because Ridley Scott is kind of stepping on your toes a little bit here with The Martian. Go check out that trailer. And the trailer had just come out. So we went and we checked it out. And we realized right away that we needed to change our setting. Ryan initially said, maybe let's try the Arctic. And me, as a Brazilian person, I fought with every possible... it was just for a few seconds, really, until he showed me pictures of Iceland, and immediately we knew, okay, yeah, this is the place.
Yeah, very cool. So since it was originally an idea for Mars, and now you're switching it to the Arctic, how much of the outline of the film changed while you were adapting it from one atmosphere to this new one?
It was pretty much the same things. Yeah, you know, there were a lot of... things like how he makes oxygen that we could just remove, which, you know, it turned out to be better for the script. And it became less of this this scientific exploration and more of this dramatic exploration of his character and what somebody would do in that situation. It's a lot more believable that a random person would end up stranded in the Arctic than a terraformed Mars. You know, you can put yourself in one of those shoes a lot easier.
Pretty much. It's kind of like trying to picture yourself in the Arctic or somewhere like a very vast desert. It's more of a realistic survival aspect. Even though odds are that might not happen to you, there is still a chance that will happen to you compared to, say, losing yourself out in outer space.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's much more relatable.
What made Mads Mikkelsen the go-to guy for the role of Overgaard?
We put a little list together of, you know, maybe five or six actors that we thought would be able to pull this off really, really well. You know, guys like Tom Hanks, of course, you know. We knew for a fact that could pull this off. And then, you know, once we got into some of the more realistic names for us, like, okay, who is someone who hasn't done this, who could be interested in this? You know, we had some different names, you know, of like action stars who we knew had the physicality for this, like someone like Charlize Theron was on the list. But really at the very top of the list, we had Mads Mikkelsen, because we knew that, you know, he had the gravitas necessary for this. He was a dancer, so he'd be able to pull this off well. And it was just a matter of the producers sending him an offer.
Yeah, and he's got that face. You can't beat that face. He says a lot with just a look.
And precisely. I mean, look at all of his previous films and previous television shows. I mean, he can just act just with his face.
Yeah. He had done already a film called Valhalla Rising, which is just entirely without dialogue. So we knew that he could do it from the beginning, and that this would be not easy for him. It wouldn't be easy for anybody, us included in the production, but we knew that he would be able to pull this off.
How did Iceland's atmosphere help to evolve the filming of Arctic during its 3-week shoot?
We had an absolutely outstanding crew. Pretty much the only people that came from the States were myself, Joe, the assistant director, and the producers. Everybody else, all the other heads of department, wardrobe, the cinematographer, production design, everybody, they were all Icelandic, and it was so important that we had Icelandic natives working on this film, because we were just outside all the time in really, really difficult conditions, and they were pros. They never skipped a beat. They were ready to rock, you know, when the game plan had to change, because, you know, the weather changed on us every 10 minutes. They were really versatile crew, and they knew how to really put their country in a beautiful light, because that landscape is something really, really special, and they knew how to capture it and how to make it look and feel the right way.
While watching the trailer for the movie, what I loved about that aspect is that looking at the scenery, it's very beautiful, but at the same time, it's kind of frightening, and I feel like you captured that really well just from the trailer alone.
Yeah, you know, we that was something that we wanted to do with the trailer, is to tell its own little story. So even the very first clip that came out of Cannes, which was about a 2-minute long clip that Ryan put together, is it tells a little story in it of itself. We try to make every single scene in the film stand out by itself, you know, and it could be plucked out of the film and tell its own little story, because is that that makes it so that you can catch the film at any time and understand what's happening, and it makes it so that it keeps you engaged in the storytelling.
Terrific. So was there anything that Mads added to the role that you two didn't think of when writing the movie?
Oh, for sure, yeah. He's such a talented actor that he can see the entire production from the page, really. You know, he's for there for you to be such a wonderful actor like this, you have to be cognizant of more than what just your character is doing. You have to be cognizant of everything, you know, because he is phenomenal in every single film that he's been on. So yeah, you know, he was able to say, you know, is this line really necessary? I think we don't need this line. I can just do it with my face. You know, we'd be talking about, okay, he goes from A to B, B to C, C to D. If we just go from A to D, on the way, he can do something kind of like B and C. And we'd say, okay, wonderful, let's just do that instead. And so a lot of shortening of things that Ryan and I, that on the page makes sense, but on the screen, he can, you know, it takes a very talented actor to do multiple things at once, but he can do it.
So what would you say was the most challenging part of filming Arctic?
Well, you'll probably get two different answers from me and Joe. I'm sure the weather and the cold for Joe, although as much as he doesn't want to admit it, I saw Joe, I don't want to say in the heat of passion, because there was no heat, but throw off his gloves and just start writing barehanded in the freezing snow. I've never been more proud of him in my life. It was great. He was taking notes in the middle of a blizzard. I think that, so he'll probably say the cold was a challenge, but I saw him climb that hill and I was very proud. I think, for me, the biggest challenge was, the speed with which we had to shoot. I was editing as we were shooting, because we, in Iceland, we only had, we had to find the sweet spot of having enough daylight to be able to make a shoot day worth it, but not so much daylight that it was going to melt the snow. So we had to find the sweet spot, and we ended up shooting in March to April. And, you know, we're laying the railroad tracks down as the train's moving. So I would be cutting scenes together. And if we needed something to stitch together two scenes, I'd have to run out to Joe with a couple of Post-its and be like, I need a shot where it starts snowing a little bit to stitch these two scenes together. And him and our crew had to go and do our pickups while we were in the middle of principal photography, because there was no coming back. As soon as the snow was gone, it was gone. And we didn't have the money to go, you know, chase snow in Argentina. Once it was done, it was done. And that was a big challenge. And I feel like we got a really great energy out of our crew with that.
Terrific. Now, I can imagine there being a lot of tension happening when filming a movie like Arctic. So my question is, what did all of you guys often do to keep the spirits up and the mood a bit lighter in between takes?
Yeah, you know, there was a lot of that. It was while we were finding the people that were going to be shooting this, we were going to be working on this. You know, we went through a couple of options for director of photography, for example, and we found the guy. We eventually went with the guy who was just had the biggest smile on his face while we were location scouting. And he was throwing his hands up, you know, screaming, being like, "This is going to look beautiful. We love it. This is going to be great." And, you know, having people with that kind of attitude really helps us move forward. You know, I was looking at some behind the scenes footage the other day, and we look miserable. Everyone looks miserable, but still, you know, everyone sort of had a smirk on their face because we knew that we were making something great and that we were doing something wonderful. And despite the harshness of the environment, we were able to create something that transcended the sum of its parts because of the people who were working on this.
Yeah, I mean, just to add to that, the Icelanders were so proud. They were really proud that, you know, their country wasn't playing another planet. It was playing, you know, somewhere up in the same part of the world. And they a lot of them actually flew out to Cannes to support the film when we went to the film festival out there. And Joe and I always talk about this when we're working with people, is that we want to work with people that it doesn't just feel like another job. We want to work with people that care and that, you know, that it matters to them. And that didn't just stop with production. I mean, our composer, our sound mixer, our sound designers, and our colorist, everybody in post was just like so dedicated to making this film, because they all believed in the script and they all felt like they wanted to put their hands on something special. And, you know, we were really honored to get that kind of response from our peers and to get that kind of support, because you can't make a movie, you know, without others. It takes a village. And, you know, Joe and I couldn't do it all ourselves. So we're really, really fortunate.
Absolutely. Now, you mentioned Cannes Film Festival, which to show off a movie there is practically every filmmaker's dream. Can you talk about what was going through your minds being at the most iconic movie festival for Arctic?
I mean, it was wonderful. We had only shown the film to maybe 40 people or so, 30, 40 people here in LA, and they were all friends of friends. We hadn't tested the film or anything like that. But then, you know, to play the second day of the festival, to play at the biggest theater that they have for 2,300 people all wearing tuxedos, you know, giving us a standing ovation at the end of it, that was such a great culmination of all the hard work that we had put into this film.
Yeah, it was surreal. And also, Joe and I come from YouTube, and we're used to come up with an idea on Monday, shoot it on Tuesday, cut it on Wednesday, and post it on Thursday. And to have to wait to be able to show people what we had done, because making a movie is a much longer process. It was really, really gratifying because on YouTube we get that instant gratification when we see the view count or we have the comments and the likes, and you know, we have that data to go by. And it was kind of nerve-wracking too because the French are notorious for having a strong opinion about cinema. So we were. I can't speak for Joe. I know I was a little nervous because you want people to like it, and you want people that appreciate film like that to like it. So to get the standing ovation at the end, I felt like so much relief. And I was, you know, really proud of our team and Joe as a director to be able to get to that stage and to succeed there.
So if the French approve, the whole world approves.
One can only hope.
Yes. So Bleecker Street, they are the guys who are going to be distributing the film Arctic. What made them the right distributor for your movie?
Well, we knew that we wanted at least the option for people to see it in the big screen at first. So we had a few options going into the festival. We were very early in the festival, so it can be difficult to sell a film very early because everyone's still holding tight to their pocketbooks. They don't know what films are going to come out. They don't know what it's going to be. But Bleecker Street came out with a big offer right off the gates. They knew right away that this was a film for them, and we decided, okay, let's go ahead and go with them because they had done a wonderful job with other films, similar size films. They never had a film that's thematically too similar to this, but you know they had films that were a similar budget and similar release plans as this one. So and they've been wonderful to work with ever since.
So you've been showing Arctic at many film festivals or private screenings, and I'm curious, while watching your final product on the screen, has there been any instance where you're looking at a specific part and think, maybe I should have done it like this, or maybe I should have changed it like that, or has there been zero regrets whatsoever with the final product?
That's a good question. It's the first time that's been asked.
It's a hard one to answer too.
Yeah,
diplomatically,
you know, it's interesting because you watch it something so many times that you know you always have the thing that's like, oh, you know, the cave could have looked like this if that other location were working better, or this shot could have looked more like that, or maybe, you know, we should have cut that shot a little earlier, or are we hanging on black here a little too long. And there's, you know, every time you see it, you're gonna have notes for yourself. Because I don't know, it's just like what your brain does, you know. That's how the film got put together, and I think a film is never finished. A film is just abandoned, you know. You just like you run out of time to keep fiddling with it. So yeah, there's always the little things that you'd want to change, but I'm really proud of how the film came out.
Yeah, on my end, I feel like Joe always says once you get happy with the finished product, you might want to quit, because we're always talking about how we need to always be learning from everything. And that was actually a really hard thing 7 years ago when I joined Joe on the YouTube channel. It was a really hard thing for me to accept, was that sometimes, you know, you promise to put a video out on Tuesday and Thursday, and you got to get a video out on Tuesday and Thursday, and you know, you can keep fiddling with something, and it might not be perfect, but you have to learn to let go and just learn from the experience and figure out, okay, the things that you wanted to make perfect on that one, make perfect on the next one. So it's this weird balancing act, because you really want to put a lot of effort and a lot of work into everything you do, but you also have to find the realistic balance of, okay, now it's time to hand it off. I mean, I could still be fiddling with the cut, but then, you know, the guys would never have had the opportunity to write the music or do the visual effects. So at a certain point, you have to let go and trust your team.
You just said something really interesting, Joe. A film's never finished, it's abandoned. So my question is, do you feel that maybe it is up to a fan following or something along the lines of something similar to that to help bring the film towards that finish line that you were trying to get it towards?
It's something like that. You know, it's you could have given us 3 years to put a cut together, And I think that we could have fiddled with it. And you start losing objectivity, I think. Everyone does. You know, it's the hardest thing for filmmakers to keep, is to watch something for the 80th time and pretend like you're watching it for the first time. Sometimes Ryan and I would be sit down and watch the film and be like, oh, all right, what's this? Oh, look, he's doing this and he's doing that. Like things that we had been, that we knew about the film, that we would just say, pretend like we were people watching it for the very first time. Mm. You know, just to remind ourselves, people are going to be seeing this for the first time. They're going to be confused about what he's doing. You know, you hear comedy directors and comedy writers talking about how they forget how some things are jokes until they see it with an audience, and the audience laughs, and they're taken aback at first because it starts becoming parts. So I think it's you know, you can fiddle with it over and over and over again, but eventually you're going to lose objectivity, and you might as well just move on with the rest of the project and lock the cut and let other people work on it and change your perception of the film.
Yeah, and I think that also something that's part of the life cycle of the film is when, like, I think this might be also kind of what you're getting at too, Evan, was that when you let go of a film and we finish it and we put it out and we release it to the public, part of that life cycle is the public seeing it and experiencing it and having a response to it. You know, Joe and I always talk about how we want people to feel something. They may not love it. They may hate it. As long as they feel something, then we've done our jobs, because I think the worst response would be if something were forgettable. You know, so we want to just kind of move the dial. And I think part of the life cycle of a, you know, film and TV and all kinds of art is getting it out to the public and letting them experience it now.
Outside of getting the standing ovation at Cannes, what has been your favorite or your most interesting fan feedback or fan reaction to Arctic while showing it at various film festivals?
I mean, I love sitting in the back of the theater and watching people react to certain things. You know, like when you show a nasty wound and you hear the from the collective, you know, sighs from the audience, or people jumping back at a scary moment. I like that. I totally understand why people make horror movies. Personally, I wouldn't, but at least not for now. It's. To me, what's been surprising is there are things that Ryan and I put into the film that we were like, no one's going to get this, but let's just put it in anyway. It's such a minor thing, and there's no way that the audience can understand this for the first time ever. It's such a minor thing just in the background, but let's just do it anyway. And some of those things people get right away. You know, there's some really subtle things that Ryan and I were talking about. That some people understood it, sometimes verbatim to the way that Ryan and I put it.
For me, the response when we were in New York, Joe elbowed me while we were watching the movie, and there was someone a couple of rows in front of us, and his jaw was just like open, like his wow. It was just on the floor. And I thought that was really, really cool, because it was a warranted reaction to the moment, and it felt like we had done our jobs, because it's a wild feeling to be sitting in a theater, a movie theater, watching your movie up there with people that are there to see it, and they don't know you, they don't have anything invested in you, they just wanted to see the movie, and it really is nuts to think, you know. A couple of years ago, we were just sitting, having a conversation about survival and about, you know, this really interesting story. And now we brought it to life and brought it out, and seeing people respond it's nuts. It's surreal. And then also my parents were there and they got to see it for the first time. And it's really nice and gratifying. My parents, you know, sacrificed a lot. Joe's parents sacrificed a lot to bring him up. And this is a dream come true for us to be able to do make-believe for a living. So, you know, it's really gratifying. That I think my favorite response has been, you know, my parents being able to see the fruits of their labor.
That's fantastic, guys. So the film Arctic opens up on February 1st. but you guys are not slowing down whatsoever. Can you guys talk about what you guys are working on next?
Sure, yeah. It's a project that Ryan actually wrote before Arctic, but it was a script that was too expensive for it to be my first feature to direct. But now, you know, because of the interest that we've gotten from Arctic, we've been able to find some wonderful actors to attach to the film and some great producers. It's called Stowaway. It all takes place inside of a spaceship headed to Mars. We're going to get to Mars in some way or another.
Yeah, one way or another, we're going to make it happen.
Yeah, it was part of a little trilogy that Ryan and I wrote. The initial one was that On Mars script, and then this one was the second one, Stowaway. And yeah, we've attached Anna Kendrick and Toni Collette to the script, and we've got two more to go.
Wow, that is just beyond fantastic to hear about. But we're still here talking about Arctic, so my final question for you is, why should my listeners go see Arctic when it opens up on February 1st?
Joe, you want to take that one?
Yeah, I'll take it.
All right.
You know, it's so that Ryan and I can have a lot of money, basically, is the
yeah. I bought a speedboat and I don't have the money for it right now, so I need that cash.
You don't even live near Marina. I don't understand why you bought the speedboat. It's a bad idea.
Yeah, I'm in a landlocked area, but it was worth it.
Yeah. I mean, you want the film to get popular enough, so you want to get, like, action figures of Arctic. You'll want to have, like, little Lego sets come out for it. It's all about the merchandising, man. It's all about the merchandising.
It is. Spaceballs. Good reference. No, on a serious note, I think people, this movie will surprise a lot of people. I think it's not simply, and this is not to disparage any other movies that are kind of put under the banner of a survival film, but I don't think our film is simply a survival film, and I think that Mads' performance is absolutely outstanding. It's a fun experience, and it's something different. It's definitely not like what a lot of stuff that's out there right now, and I'm really proud of that.
That's a better answer than money.
And money.
Joe, Ryan, thank you so much for joining me here on One-on-One Arctic. Hit select theaters on February 1st. Please be sure to go check it out. Guys, thank you once again. And best of luck to what you have in store for the future.
Thanks so much, man. It was great talking to you.